At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
What is up, listeners? It is the X episode. And you know what that means? It's our origin episode. It's also our crossover episode with Cryptids of the Corn. And we are talking about how we met and the stories that we personally experienced that led us up to what we're doing right now. So this is a little bit different than what we kind of normally do on the show. They're a little bit macabre. They're more spooky paranormal instances than we're normally doing on the show. But I don't think that they're going to disappoint. What do you think, Hallie?
Not at all. No, not at all. We've literally been teasing our listeners the entire season, and now we're finally going to deliver. And if you're just joining us, look at you being naughty and just jumping right in there.
Oh, yeah.
Getting the payoff. If you don't know us, my name is Hallie.
I'm Blair.
And we are the Ladies of Macabre. And we're just about to wrap up season one, and we thought what better way to do that than to give you all the details on how the show started, the crazy story about how we even freaking know each other.
Yep.
How
the
that
weird connection.
How it all came about, why it took us like 10 months to actually meet each other in person after we already had the show going.
Lot of people were shocked that we had never met before and we literally connected and met this way. It's just weird. And then we found out we're like technically related, and it's just weird, but it's cool.
Welcome to the Midwest.
Midwest magic. I don't know what that's. Hey, at least it was through Laura Ingalls, all right?
Yeah, of all the ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Badass.
Prairie life. Yeah. Badass. Prairie life. Midwest magic connection.
So, listeners, don't freak out. You're actually going to hear us on Cryptids of the Corn podcast. They actually hosted the episode for us, and you're gonna hear that now, so buckle up.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the Cryptids of the Corn.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Oh, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
A great white shark was stolen.
Oh, someone stole a shark?
I got stuff for you you don't even know about.
She's a witch. She turned me into a newt.
Who knows? Anything could be possible.
It's really big abduction vibes.
Holy moly.
It sounds like you were abducted.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
Welcome back to Crippus the Corn Podcast. I'm the great and powerful mystery.
I'm J-Clone 77.
So this is...
You made a goof.
I made a goof. This is season 5, and that's a season 4 intro.
You done goofed.
Yeah, well, I am a little bit of an alcoholic.
Well, glad everyone knows that now, for sure. If you didn't know before, now you know.
Season 5, you having fun?
No, it's been a ball.
But we're not alone.
Who are we with? We are joined today by two special guests on this episode of Cryptids of the Corn on the Macabre podcast.
We're idiots.
We're joined by the hosts of the Macabre podcast, Hallie and Blair. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello.
I just learned before we started that it's not Haley's comment, it's Hallie's comment.
That song by who's
debatable.
Who sang that song?
I don't know.
But I can see Haley's comment. They lied.
Yeah.
I think it depends on where you're from, how you say it.
Northwest Ohio, we say everything wrong.
No, I think we say everything right.
Depends on who you talk to.
Talk to me.
I can't believe I used the wrong intro.
Well, we don't have the new one yet, do we?
I do.
Oh.
Send the email.
Way to go.
Maybe I'll splice it in.
Nah, it's too much work.
It is. Okay. But no, you guys, we're doing a big cross show for both our platforms, so thank you for coming on. It's been a long time in the making.
Yes. It's an interesting story.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, well, thank you for letting us be on your show, too. It's always weird when we do it this way, because, like, who's running the program?
We're letting you run the program.
All right, yeah. So we'll see how that goes. But Hallie was going to come up and actually record this in studio with us until Ohio finally got winter.
Womp womp.
Literally today.
I mean, last night into the day, it was very interesting because we haven't had really winter at all yet.
No, maybe like 2 days, maybe.
That snow, but it was like 35 degrees.
Yeah, it didn't count.
It's like, okay, come on.
But now it's here.
Yeah, finally get ready to ice fish. But we've known Hallie for a while, and I've known of Blair. I've heard Blair's voice a lot, so it's finally fun to sit and talk with everybody. But I know we're going to get into some really interesting encounters. I think I know bits and pieces of it. But how did you guys meet? How did you guys get going?
Do you want me to lead this one?
I think you should because it's kind of funny and...
It's wild.
It is wild.
So, funny story. Our listeners still don't know how we actually met.
So this is
the first time they're actually going to hear our origin story.
There we go.
Which is appropriate because basically the way this all started was... just about a year ago, I think, is when you and I first met, Justin.
Yeah.
And I was kind of doing a side podcast on my own. And then through our graphic designer, who works on both of our shows, Pear, the wonderful Pear.
The drunk Swede.
He just cheerfully, like, connected... You know, you guys, Nick from America's Scary Land, and said, hey, these guys are awesome. They're really great dudes. I think you should, like, talk to them about their show and just kind of, like, yeah. So that's where it started initially. And then through Nick and my show, which I was doing more of, like, interview styles, collecting weird stories, he said, hey, I have this friend. She has these crazy encounters that happened on her family's property. I think she'd be great for the show. I think you guys would really get along. So fast forward, we did the interview, and then by the end of the interview, I was like, have you ever thought about doing a podcast?
The answer was no. Because Nick kept asking too, because he's like, I need you on the show. I'm like, that's fair, because how that happened was we were all hanging out at a Friendsgiving. And we started talking about some scary stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I should really be talking about this yet. And because I didn't really talk about what happened until just a handful of years ago, to be honest. Because I'm like, people are going to think I'm crazy. So we started talking about that stuff, and he's like, I need to have you on the show. And I'm like, well, okay. We'll see how it goes. And then that's how it all started. And we were sitting there one for another Friendsgiving, and he said, I think I need to get you in touch with this lady. And I was like, this oh, lady. No. This lady. And I'm like, oh no, I'm a shy person until you get to know me. And he's like, no, I really think you guys are going to hit it off. It was like star-crossed podcasters when you interview me.
So yeah, no. And then we actually just met in person for the first time in November.
Oh, wow.
So oh, we yeah. started recording in January of this, of 2023.
Yes.
And met finally in November.
And I think I drunk called Nick that night.
You did.
I can't even. I don't even. Was that like? Was it, you said Thanksgiving?
Friendsgiving. Yeah, that's where we met.
Because I think we were going out to mom and dad's house, and I'm like, I'm gonna call Nick
on a whim.
Yeah, just on a whim. Well, he had texted me that day, and I just I'm had gotten into the sauce early.
Mm. And he's imagine like, that.
He's like, yeah, I can't talk a lot right now because.
You were talking about when
you called Nick.
When Hallie went to
Hallie
see
went. Yeah. Anyway, I just drunkenly called up there the same night that the surprise party was, and I was mad at Nick because I was like, I'd have drove up.
Yeah, where's our invite?
Oh, we weren't doing nothing. No, continue. I'm sorry.
So yeah, that's kind of how it all went down, and here we are, full circle,
mm-hmm.
getting ready to start our season two.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Very exciting.
Yeah. I think it's crazy. I think maybe we'll do this right before the season finale starts.
Ah, so you're sneaking into mm-hmm. season four.
I think I'll
less editing.
Get a crowbar. Force it into season four. But no, it's super exciting. You guys are growing a lot. I mean, you're a lot farther along than we were at that stage. So that's amazing. We talked a lot of shop before we got rolling, and it's super exciting.
Yeah, we're excited. We're really happy to be here with you today. And so, yeah, we have some creepy stuff to share with you.
Spooky, scary stories.
I think that's what we're all here for, too, is now, hearing those spooky stories.
I'm curious of where Blair's going to start. I'm pointing at Blair first.
Well, I want to preface this by saying that I was actually able to sit down and interview every person that was there that night for the very first time for this particular show, because it's been a long time and we all experienced it. But, you know, when you start talking, you start remembering more, mm-hmm. you start remembering more details, you're getting other people's perspectives. And I just want to say thank you to those people. Because if you are listening, I am so grateful for that. Otherwise, it's just me going, well, back in the day. this is going to be my best attempt at getting five perspectives
of
this situation. But I think where we should probably start is back when the first incident that I ever heard about happened with my dad and his step siblings, because unfortunately I've had family that has recently passed away that owned this land, so it's a little different now, and somebody will probably be, I don't know, we'll see what they think about that. But Hallie and I did try to go and find this when she came to visit me.
Well, that in itself is a story.
Yes, it is. And I was getting very angry, but after talking with some people, I did find out that we got really close, and it was in the area that both you and I got that
feeling.
Awkward feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. But so as far as I know, because of everything, the land looks completely different than what it had previously, but I have some details that I can give that will give you a good understanding of this place without giving a lot away. So this area of land is on, we'll say, rural central Wisconsin. I'm going to keep it vague at the request of my dad. Back in the late 80s, his step siblings had a party. They had a boombox and beer and fire because this place, it's just land. Like, the family uses it to hunt. And they're having a rip-roaring good time, as you do, in Wisconsin. And they started noticing that the boombox was cutting in and out, which, you know, at that time you're thinking, and change the antenna, you know. And all of a sudden, static came through. There was a growling noise and this metallic-y sounding, razor through the boombox. And one of the friends of my step aunts and uncles that were out there saw a pair of red eyes in the tree line, up in the tree. And they freaked out and they booked it. A lot of people won't go out there to this day just from that incident alone. even though there is still hunting on that land, but a lot of people won't go out there. My dad doesn't have a problem with it, surprisingly. My dad is he's 6'4", burly guy, no nonsense. But he is kind of one of those people. When we're out there, he's murmuring to himself. And we're what did you say? He's oh, nothing, nothing. Well, when I was younger, he would say, I'm talking to them.
To them?
Them, yeah. We're respecting them. We're respecting the land. And so, to me, it's creepy to hear that coming from a guy that is very
it's your dad.
yeah, exactly. So since then, that was the story that we always heard growing up, was about the boombox incident. He did tell me recently that some of his step siblings have other stories, but a lot of he didn't want to tell me what they were because we didn't have permission to use them. But he said anytime that they would tell those stories, they would always go, oh yeah, but I was drinking, or yeah, that was a long time ago, or let's not talk about it. It's just kind of one of those things where it's well, I kind of witnessed this, but I don't know, maybe I didn't, kind of deal. So besides that, my dad has seen a creature run across the road coming from the land and out into the cornfield that's right across the road from it. Based on what he has told me, because it was a little bit of a distance away, the thing was huge. It looked like a mountain lion, but it was running like a human across the road.
What? Like bipedal?
Yeah. Yeah. It had a tail too, like a mountain lion. What he said, because he saw this during the day, he said that it's gray. And it looks like the hair is really close to the skin if it has hair. But it looked like it had hair, he said. It's just super short to the skin. And he said that it ran very fast. It was very muscular. And it seemed to be pretty big. More so muscular than tall, but he said that it had to have been taller than him. There was an incident where I did ask my mom back when they were still married. Apparently, I was in the car seat in the back. They were driving past the land, and they had seen something very similar, except this time that thing was on all fours slinking across the road and going into the same cornfield. Mm-hmm. But it's always in that area. My aunt, who would be my dad's oldest sister, she said that a lot of times there'd be odd things that would happen if they were doing like yard work and stuff on the land, like if they were chopping wood back when they were kids. There was one incident that she had told me that has really stuck with her, where they were working and she felt like something was like looking at her or watching her. And she just kind of like involuntarily turned like where it is, you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. And in the cornfield at a distance, she saw this thing that had red eyes. It was really tall coming out of the corn. But do you guys remember when we were kids, they had like that ants in the pants game?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she said, and because I asked her like a while ago, like, how come you never wanted to play that game with me when I was a kid, you know? And she's like, because the ants freaked me out. Because she said that figure that was coming out of the corn was shaped like those ants from the Ants in the Pants game. And it was completely black and had red eyes.
Hmm.
So, okay. Can we pause there just for a second?
Oh, yeah.
I have a definitely. Lot of notes.
There's yeah.
very interesting.
Questions.
So far.
Questions. I'm yeah. sure you have questions.
Yeah.
Insight.
No, so I don't know if you've seen when you're talking about the boombox. I was trying to think. I'm like literally... The last week and a half, somebody had just talked to me about this boombox with Bigfoot. They said Bigfoot. You didn't say Bigfoot.
No.
They said Bigfoot talking through it.
Really?
And I'm trying to remember, and I was like, oh, it was one of our listeners that just contacted me about that. They said that they were having a party, and this would be, I won't say the state, it's the Midwest, and they were having a party, drinking, having fun. Boombox cut out, and then it sounded like, weird metallic voices started coming through it, and then they had what? Bigfoot encounters around.
Oh my god!
What?
Yeah,
very really? Similar.
And that's why I was thinking. I'm like, I've just heard this story. Hmm. That's why I was sitting here like,
did she email you?
No, it was no. You know who it was. We'll talk about it off air.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we should. I want to know more. Based on, and what kind of? I will definitely tell you what is on the land too. I really honestly don't think that that's what it is.
After me and them had talked, we came to that similar conclusion for their thing that happened. But yeah, I don't think that was Bigfoot either for you.
Yeah.
My next little note, unless you had something about the boombox.
That's so
No. I had one about the gray thing that ran across the road.
Yeah, I knew you would. But Catman, do you know there's a lot of Catman sightings here in the U.S.?
I've heard about this. That's what really? I wonder, too, because when you said it was more like a mountain lion cougar type thing, like in the silvery gray color, kind of fits.
So the Catman's New England, a lot of the sightings, but they're also out west. A lot of the real famous sighting was a group of kids that seen a black panther. And this was like 04, 05. It wasn't like super long ago, you know. It's relatively recently.
Yeah.
And they're walking because it was kind of a rural town. So they'd walk past this field getting back from school. But it was like a town of like 500 people, so, you know, and they seen a black panther. And they're all froze because they were all kind of scared. They were, you know, 12-year-olds. And then they said it stood up like a man and ran away.
Ugh.
And it just they panicked and ran. And we'll have to do an episode on that because there's a little bit more to that story because there's.
Yeah.
I can't remember which Native American tribe is there. But they actually have legends of a similar creature in that same area.
Interesting that you bring that up.
Yep. If you find out what tribe, please let me know.
Did you?
That definitely comes into play here, I think.
Blair, were you ever able to pull up, like, you know how they have the indigenous maps?
Mm-hmm.
To look at that area to see kind of like what the overlay is on that?
Yes. So based on what I was able to find, although I would really like more research on it just because I like to have things that confirm what I'm finding, but without giving too much of the location away, based on the history of how the town around it was founded and what happened, I'm pretty sure that it was the Ojibwa tribe.
The Ojibwa?
Mm-hmm.
So...
That could be wrong.
We actually have a lot of Native American listeners, and I'll tell you what, they could probably complain the least in any of, I don't think I've ever had a complaint from them. Corrections, but I appreciate it. So any of our Native American listeners, if you have any inclination on these topics, please email in Cribs of Corn podcast.
Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I would greatly appreciate that because after you, after you have an experience, it's just weird because you want to know about what just happened.
Always, you know, trying to rationalize and try to find and not only that, but like, yeah, well, as you get into your story further, mm-hmm. there's going to be more stuff that you're going to be like, okay.
There's a lot of tie-ins with American Indians with reference on what I heard, mm-hmm. And things that are on the land. So we come to the part of the story where I'm going to tell you, which you're probably like, I'm not surprised at all, but there is a burial mound on this land.
Yeah.
Mm. And it sits in kind of the, not the valley, because it's not a valley, but it's on the bottom section of the land because it actually part of the land has a ridge to it.
Okay.
Which is going to come into play later. My dad, I mean, and honestly, he hasn't done a lot of research or anything like that. And the tribes that were there hundreds of years ago, he thinks that possibly because there's one section on the ridge that's more flat than the rest of the land. And he thinks that perhaps, and we both could be very wrong on this, but he thinks that it could have been an area for gathering or for ritual.
Sure. I mean, from, like, for example, Serpent's Mound is built on an uplifted ridge overlooking mm-hmm. the rest, you know, so a lot of these spiritually significant areas were built in areas of overlook. Mm-hmm. So you have that kind of situation. I mean, that would make sense to me. And the U.S. systematically destroyed so many burial mounds so fast that you couldn't, there could be a whole complex there and you hit, mm-hmm. there's one left. I know, for example, Wisconsin, the Dragonback Mound?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the largest standing mound in the country. Mm-hmm. And the only reason it survived was because people just thought it was a hill.
Yep.
It was big enough to be mistaken for a hill, and then they started flying over it, and it looks like a big dragon.
Hmm.
Yep.
And then you had something to say about the Catman, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, are you sure it just wasn't a furry?
I mean, it is Wisconsin.
Why is he running so fast?
I mean,
why is he going in the car?
He's late. I know. There's a convention. He's late for it.
It wasn't. I thought you were going to talk about your big white thing that ran in front of the road.
I mean, it was similar, kind of, but I was just so far away. But I had a similar experience where I seen something white run across the road, you know, about a half a mile in front of me. And when
when it's like that far away and you're like, what is that?
You thought it was his dog.
I thought it was my dog at first because I was looking for my dog.
Yeah. But
then as I was coming closer to the spot, I realized there's no way that was my dog.
The size of a polar bear.
It was it was too tall and like had long legs like a deer and it was just shaggy long fur. And I was it's definitely not
was
my.
Was it running on all fours?
Yes.
Well, could you see legs?
Yeah, I saw
Okay.
Could see the legs come down. But it just couldn't make heads or tails of what it was at all. It was just weird. Mm-hmm. And then, by the time I got to the area where it crossed the road, there was nothing there. Because it went into an empty field, and there was just nothing there in the field. It was odd.
The ghost of a polar bear.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Sorry, Blair, continue.
I will leave out part of details on the ridge for a second, because that kind of plays into my brother's side of the story, because he's actually witnessed and seen things out there that I haven't.
I did remember a question. I'm so sorry.
No, go for it.
There was a lot there. Who had seen the ants in the pants creature?
My aunt.
And oh, I guess the soundboard's too far away. Hey, there's a hit the button. Ants. Your aunt seen the giant ant, but they don't really. The ants in the pants don't look like ants.
No,
they look very weird.
Yeah.
So
something was on its head.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. But she, again, didn't go into a lot of detail.
Right.
And from some of these accounts of whatever big dark figure with the red eyes is, most of the time when it's seen, it's almost like a shadow, like you can see through it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I am going to come out and say I haven't seen anything. All of my experiences were audio. My brother has, though, which we could go into his side. Then
yeah, sorry, I keep interrupting you.
Into...
You continue however you want to.
No, you're totally fine. Interrupt. It's okay. I'll tell his thing before we get into the shared experience. So my brother is younger than me by 5 years, and he was pretty young when my dad kind of, you know, talked to him about how, you know, things are out here and we just need to respect the place. We need to keep it clean. They don't like us tampering with things out here. And so that's just kind of always been how it was referred to. And my brother's just like, okay. So my dad had told him one night that when he was out there with him that, you know, you should go over the ridge here and, you know, just come up over this hill by the mound and just sit with no flashlight and just introduce yourself. Just say you're my son and that, you know, you're here to respect the land and that, you know. So my brother's like, all right, okay. You know, he's small. He's not that old. So he went over the hill and he didn't take a flashlight. And there was moonlight, so at least like he could kind of see where he was going. And this is out in the middle of nowhere, so like there's no like what do they call that, light pollution. Mm-hmm. So he's out there and he's like, hi, my name is, you know. And he just kind of sat for a little bit after and he's like, all right, I think I did my thing. And he turned to come back towards the fire where my dad was, and he saw this huge white, what he thought looked like a white stag. And he said that it made absolutely no noise, which he didn't know how it was possible. And he didn't even know how it was possible for this stag to hold this gigantic rack on his head, basically. It just did not physically make sense. And it was looking at him. And what he told me before was he said that it almost looked like it was like blind, but he couldn't really tell in the dark. But after like talking to him a little bit more about it, he said, I think that it wasn't like blind. I don't think it had eyes, but I know that it was looking at me because he said the sockets were hollowed out.
Oh,
Ugh, gross.
That's
yeah. And he said that it was only illuminated by the moonlight. So he really couldn't get a, like a really good detail on it. But he said the thing was massive and it just kind of like started walking a little bit, not towards him, but it was looking at him and like walking in another direction. And he kind of like looked over to the sides and then looked back and the thing was gone. And there was no way that it could have gone anywhere, you know, without him being able to see it. And so when he came back to the fire, my dad's like, hey, you know, did you, so my dad said, hey, did you hear or see anything? And he said, yeah, I did. So he told my dad what he had seen. And my dad kind of said, okay. He said, that's something out here. He said that that might be a good sign. Apparently when my dad was younger and he had done the same thing, he saw a doe that was similar to that. My dad is pretty vague with some of the things, and I know there are stories that he hasn't told me. I don't know if somebody had told him to do the same thing like he had told my brother to do that, or if he just decided that was something he was going to try when he was younger over the hill. But he had done the exact same thing that my brother had when my dad was younger, and he had seen a doe. Kind of going off of aspects like that, my dad has said that there are signs if they accept you or not, or like warning signs. A lot of times if, you know, you're in an okay spot, you'll hear songbirds. What time of day, it doesn't matter, including the in the middle of the night. If you're not accepted, you're going to know it right away. There's always like this feeling, like a heavier feeling on the land to begin with. But if you're not that welcome, it's going to make sure you know that you're not welcome. Like there's mm-hmm. senses of being watched. There's noises similar to what was experienced with the radio, which kind of brings us into the incident. So my stepmom was introduced to the land prior to the night of the incident. She did have an incident herself, very small. They went camping, just the two of them out there. And my dad had told her, like, hey, I just kind of wanted to let you know that there's some weird things that happen out here. And she was just like, cool. Sure. Well, about like 5 minutes after saying that, my stemp uncles that have like some like backhoes and cats and stuff out there to do work out there with removing trees and stuff, just have like random stuff sitting around. There's like a camper and like that kind of thing. Well, the backhoe that was there at the time, all of a sudden the lights started coming on it, on and off, on and off. And dad's like, okay. There's your sign, I guess. So he went to go check it out and stuff, and there was literally nothing wrong with the backhoe or anything. Like there were no wires chewed or anything like that. So take that what you will, but that was what she had experienced. So where this plays in is we're telling my stepsister about this as we're driving to go camping here. And my stepsister is not a believer. And she really honestly thought that my dad was just trying to like pull her leg and like, I don't believe in this stuff. You're just trying to get me. And she was kind of getting frustrated the fact that we all kept talking about it. And she started like getting, you know, a little bit more enthusiastic about how she doesn't believe. And when we were sitting around the fire, she's like, come at me, ghosties, like kind of just almost egging it on.
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward to that night, we're packing up the fire and we're going to bed. And my dad and my stepmom were going on a walk. So it was just the three of us kids getting into the shared tent. And how it was laid out was my brother was the furthest away from the door, and we were all just like sardined in the line to the door. There was my brother, me, my stepsister in the middle, then my stepmom, and then my dad right next to the door. But before they got back, we're just laying there talking, and my brother just falls asleep, basically. And I'm like, well, okay, he is a sleeper. But I was like, okay, dude, okay. So my sister and I are talking, and suddenly I start hearing songbirds. And I'm like, okay, I might just be doing this to myself. So we start talking again and stuff, and my stepsister's like, do you hear something? Like birds? And I'm like, oh, okay, you hear that too? That's great. So she started getting a little bit more nervous. My dad and my stepmom come back from their walk, and my stepsisters are like, mom, do you hear that? Do you hear that? And she was talking about like how we both heard it. And my dad's like, yep. He said, that's okay. Just go to sleep. That's a good thing. Well, before I went to sleep, and this is going to come back with my brother as well, but I wear glasses. And so I thought maybe it was just my eyes. But when we talked about it, I'm glad that he saw it too, because I don't know if anybody else saw it or if they were paying attention to it. My stepsister didn't say, but at the top of the tent, like where the vent would be, it looked like a cloud of gnats, like gnats that you would walk through.
Okay.
A big cloud. No noise, just like gnats don't really make noise. That's how it started. My brother also remembers seeing them before he went to sleep. And he said that he remembered wanting to get up to take care of the problem before falling asleep, but he just like passed out. So it started like that. We went to sleep, and when I woke up next, I heard running around the tent. And I'm talking like somebody was taking laps around the freaking tent, like so close, if they tripped, they were falling into the tent.
Wow.
And I mean, it was consistent, but it didn't sound like anything big or small. Like it sounded like an actual person on two legs running around the tent. And I didn't see any shadows or anything like that. I was still hearing like the forest noises of like critters and frogs and insects and stuff like that. But I didn't hear the songbirds anymore. And when I looked up at the top of the tent, that cloud of gnats was now darker and coming together like a mass of something. And I went to sleep again. I don't know how, but I did. I will say that around the time that we went to bed was around midnight. So all of this happened within 2 to 3 hours based on the last thing that happened. It was around 3 o'clock in the morning. But the next time I woke up, I didn't hear the running around the tent, but I heard war drums and dancing bells, like the bells that they wear around their ankles.
Yeah.
And it was a consistent pounding. It never changed. It was just one direct pound. And it sounded like the dancing bells accompanying it. And I remember my dad saying that if you had ever heard any drums out there, you were deep shite. And I'm like, interesting. Okay. I still don't have my glasses on, but I'm looking around to kind of see if people are like stirring. My brother is completely out, not moving. Like he is asleep. And I'm looking back up at the top of the tent, and that thing is now the size of a softball, black, and it looks like this mass of flies. There's like these black specks coming in and out of this thing, and it's all one thing. You could tell there was no noise to it. It was a moving mass with these things like coming in and out. It looked like flies based on me without my glasses on. And I'm like, this can't be good. This is not good. And I somehow went back to sleep after that. And I don't know how long it was after. From the account from my stepmom said that she woke up to hear the drums also. And based on what she felt was the time range, after the drums and bells started, it was probably about 20-ish minutes to a half hour once we started hearing the noise. So that's when I woke up, because my stepsister was freaking out trying to wake up my stepmom and my dad. My dad also was not waking up. I woke up to my stepsister shaking me, and I heard this huge noise. And at this point, there was no other noise in the woods going on. It was just this noise. And it sounded like three animals in one, basically, is the best way I can describe it. It sounded like a lion roaring, a horse whining, and an elephant trumpeting all at once. And this noise, it was the same every time. It echoed like an air raid siren, but it was very short noises. They weren't prolonged. And when I asked my stepmom about this noise, she said that prior to that noise starting, which was coming over by the picnic table, which was only about 25 feet away from our tent, She said that she heard what sounded like something jumping on top of the picnic table, up and down. And this noise wasn't necessarily attached to that jumping noise, is what she had said. Well, we finally got my dad to wake up. And my stepmom's like, you need to take care of this. I don't know about this. And my stepsister's freaking out. I'm like sitting there like backhanding my brother in the face to wake up because I'm like, I can't carry you out of here if we need to leave. Like, I don't know what to do. And my dad said, all right, unzip the tent window. So my stepmom unzipped the window to the tent and my dad flashes a flashlight out there and you couldn't see the table. You couldn't see anything. It was completely black. You could see nothing. The moon was, it didn't look like the moon was out, nothing. And my dad said, I told you that I would take care of it in the morning. We're not going to keep this place a mess. We respect the area. We are only spending the night and we will be out first thing in the morning. Half a second after that noise was like over by the picnic table, it was immediately right next to the tent. There was no noise of jumping or running. It was just there. And it made that noise again. And my dad said, I promise. We're going to take care of it. We promise. And this thing like made this huffing noise. But the thing was, is like, it was like right up against that window and the tent. We couldn't hear or we couldn't like feel or smell anything. And it should have like, based on how big this thing sounded and how close it was, you would have felt like there would have been like an imprint or an indent against the tent with the pressure. There was nothing, but it sounded almost like an angry bull, like huffing, you know? And after my dad had said that one last time, this thing like pounded off into the woods going towards like the ridge area. And you only heard like three big stomps and then nothing. No noise the rest of the night. There were no critter noises or insects, nothing. It was dead silent until the sun came up. And I haven't been back since.
I got a lot of questions.
You know, and you wonder about it because it's like, okay, I never saw anything. I only heard things. But it's consistent with the stories that I've been told by my dad. And this, I mean, people in the family have been experiencing this since my step-grandpa bought the land, like how many decades ago? And you wonder like, okay, was I freaking dreaming? Like, this is just nuts because it's like, you didn't know what to think during the incident. And to have everybody kind of come together again to talk about what happened, just kind of, it feels good, but it's scarier because it's like, oh yeah, okay, so you saw that too.
That actually happened.
Yeah.
I did not hallucinate.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've tried to look up on my own, like what some of that stuff could have been. And if anybody has any sort of information about any of the things that have been out there, I would love to know because it has just been something that has stuck with me definitely.
So I've heard a lot of bits of your encounter from a lot of other people. That's why I've been making notes the whole time, which I find extremely fascinating. And that just helps it flesh out more that, you know, other people are experiencing similar things, you know.
Right.
For example, I just the three voices at one time has been reported with Sasquatch. Our buddy Scott Nelson, when he'd analyzed some of the original Sierra sounds and other stuff. Anybody didn't know who Scott Nelson is? I always call him Scott T. Nelson, but it's not. Scott Nelson's the original, the guy who worked for the Navy that was a linguist. And analyzes Sierra sounds. He's a good buddy of ours. And they found some Bigfoot calls, or what people say are Bigfoot calls, that have the ability to produce. It's almost like they have different sets of vocal cords, the way he was describing it.
More complex.
So they'll make three different sounds. It's like three people talking out of one throat. So that's where you get that layered sound.
Yeah.
That was an interesting thing. So the mass of insects is very interesting, swarming around you. The charging without hearing any sound. So like you said, it jumped from the picnic table all the way to the front of the tent, huffed at you, which is another very Bigfoot thing. We've heard that a lot where, you know, that blowing air, that blowing, and then stomping off. So we've had several people even on this show that have described that same thing. Bigfoot's dead silent. They didn't hear it until it got caught or it got called out, and then it stomps off. I think it was Noah, right?
Noah, yep.
Noah with the marshmallows.
Yep.
Bigfoot was stealing marshmallows from their camp. And it what it was doing, it was making scary noises over here, and there may have been two Bigfoot. And this one was drawing attention over here, and he caught the one at the backside of camp stealing everything. And once he caught that one, it you know, it hopped.
Look over there!
This is not, in my opinion, Bigfoot at all, though. I actually think I know what this is.
Oh, I want to hear yours.
Because I didn't tell you about the last aspect of the land.
I won't tell anything yet, because I have other questions before I give my analysis. Cool.
So something that my brother shared with me after his experience was that my dad had taken him on a walk past the point where he had seen the thing. And he had told my brother that there is a cave up on the ridge.
Ooh.
My dad, when he was younger, actually went to the cave. And what's scary is, there were depictions on the wall of the cave. Old drawings. Ones that you would typically see in a cave dwelling or, you know, just depictions from tribes. What my brother will tell me, or what he did share with me, is that he said that there are your typical pictures of what you think of when you think of cave drawings. But he said that some of those things depicted didn't seem human.
Hmm.
And what he did tell me also is that when my dad was younger, he had gone in and had an experience that he refuses to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I did not ask my dad about that. I did not pressure him, but apparently he didn't tell my brother anything else either. That was all that he had said. And he refuses to talk about it, which I did not know that there was even a cave until a couple years ago. My brother gave me a lot more insight than what I had known previously, which to me makes it way more scary. But yeah, I want to know what you think.
I got more questions first. So my first question is, do you personally feel it's one phenomena representing in many different ways?
I kind of do.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
When we did our initial interview.
That's the feeling I got. It's all one thing or one group of things that is representing itself in a myriad of different ways.
Different ways.
And
I'm so glad.
Definitely intelligent.
Oh, it's very intelligent.
It knows. Yeah.
And angry.
Now, more so when there's changes being made.
Disrespect.
Yeah. My dad had straight up said, he goes, there will be obviously times that you're out there and absolutely nothing happens. But he said, there seems to be a pattern with it that any time that they would chop wood or any time that there would be some cosmetic change, that something would show up in one way.
Hmm. So what do you, I think you may have alluded to this a little bit earlier. Do you think this is some Native American ghost? Is that kind of what your thought was?
Yeah, I really do think that it ties very closely to that, especially with the mound being there, with the sounds that I heard, it makes sense that that's what is playing there.
So what makes you think, personally, that it's a Native American mound?
I never thought about that before, actually. Just based on the area and based on the drums that I heard.
Blair, didn't you say when we did the original interview that there was like
in the mound itself that there was like a hole, like an opening.
I know what this
is. And then like when you look down in it, you were able to see stuff.
But you could barely make out what it was. Like, and it's just because the sun hit it just right.
Yeah, you shouldn't go near that thing ever again.
Oh, I need to know what you're saying.
This is Justin. Do you know where I'm going with it?
Maybe.
This is a fairy fort.
What?
That's a fairy fort.
I don't know about a fairy fort.
So several cultures. Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not a good thing.
Oh, no.
So everybody knows fairy rings, right? And that's kind of the small. So when fairies take hold, and this is the fae folk. We're not talking like the little, you know, Tinkerbell fairies. Fae folk are metaphysical in a lot of the mythologies surrounding them. They take on many different forms. A lot of the big ones we believe right now as Sasquatch-like entities are these red-eyed creatures are actually the fae putting on a protective face. They get big and scary, and they mimic something, or they know that's what you want to see, but they take on many shapes. The Native Americans, their fae, they called them the Lost Tribe. So that's like the Pukwudgies out here in like New England area. That's what they are. They're the Lost Tribe. They consider them intelligent like people, but not people. So that's why they call them a tribe. They recognize their intelligence. So a fae fort or a fairy fort is a large mound that can be in a myriad of different shapes. Normally it has some kind of rocks around the outside in a circle somewhere. They can be covered up. And in the top of it somewhere is a hole to the fae realm.
Holy shit.
And so fae have to tie their portals to something. So a lot of these littler fae encounters, like when we had Lori, do you remember? She had that big tree. But the closer she got to the tree, the more dread she felt, the further away she got from it. And this big, gnarled, old tree. So the fae need this spot. So when a fae establish in this area, they make these fairy forts, or the fae forts. And they're mounds of dirt. England and Ireland and Scotland mostly dug all theirs up. And when you attack them, you can actually get transported to the fae realm. It's a bleeding area. So you can bleed through. Creatures from over there bleed through to ours. And unfortunately, people can end up over there.
Oh, that's terrifying.
So the fae can take all kinds of shapes. You know, they're also called earth spirits or whatever. And that's kind of the phenomena you're describing. The white stag is a big thing in Ireland and Scotland. So that's a form they take often.
Well, I find that really interesting that you brought that up, because around the mound, there's actually these plants that don't grow up, they grow out.
So it's like a circle.
Like they can't even grow up. These plants are meant to grow up, but they grow out instead. It's like they can't grow up.
The feelings you guys get too, these overall big feelings, and the fae can put you to sleep. That's a known thing across the world. And I'm not talking, our listeners know, but I'm not talking European fae. Almost every major culture or country on the planet has a very similar set of legends around the fae. Africa has their own fae. North America, we're talking about the Native Americans with their fae. Fae is just a word that we choose to use to, you know, describe these beings. But fae mounds are extremely scary to be around. I would be kind of curious if you looked into your area to see if there's any missing kids.
I don't think so. At least not that I've heard of, but I could back. Research to that.
Further back, I wonder further back.
Because everywhere around the land is already just processed farmland.
So much farmland.
So much farmland. I mean, well, you know, Hallie. Yeah. Because
we drove and drove and drove and drove and drove.
So it could be the last stronghold. So with Lori's encounter, there was just this little woods in the middle of her city. And it was the only part of old growth forest that they had anywhere for hundreds of miles. And it was probably the last little bit. And they put in a new bridge, and the fae activity went wild. And it went super oppressive. It went super crazy because they were changing a bridge in there. So I think you may... And they manifest as insects, and they manifest as great, big, huge, powerful things. And the red eyes is definitely an attribute we attribute to the fae. And Pukwudgies are, you know, very... They're hard to deal with because they can be, even when they're nice, they can be extremely dangerous to be around. because their jokes may result in your death.
Oh my God.
Because they don't view, they have a whole different mindset with how death and life works. Mm-hmm. So like puck wedgies are generally, some of the stories are generally spoken about with them not being, you know, mean, but they'll lead you off a cliff for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they think it's funny.
So that's interesting. So they, I don't know a lot about this phenomenon. So they have the ability to, it's not really like shapeshift necessarily, they but like present themselves.
So think of them kind of as open energy.
Okay. And they put on can just like manifest in whatever form.
They put on a mask for you to interact with them. So a lot of these Bigfoot-like entities that people describe, the paranormal Sasquatch, these big red eyes things. So we have a buddy that is a Bigfoot researcher. He had this happen once, to where he was following a Bigfoot with red eyes, and it walked off a cliff like a cartoon.
Oh my God! Yeah,
but he knew there's a cliff, and he followed it with the headlights, and he can see the silhouette, and the big eyes, and it's walking like it's a person, but it just goes right off the cliff into nothing, into air. It doesn't fall or nothing.
Continued on, like Indiana Jones style.
Well, he was feeling like it was trying to lead him off the cliff. Because you're following me, follow me, follow me. And he's like, no, I know there's a cliff right there. And so he would, because he was a big flesh and blood guy until that happened. So they can put on multitudes of faces it really depends on their mood. So the Fae are extremely hard to understand. They're intelligent, but they have a different mindset than humans. It's kind of halfway between, I would say, kind of like a computer and us.
Okay.
They're very, it's hard to kind of describe because they're very foreign. They're very alien in their thought process. And we think a lot of the Fae is actually the manifestation of mushrooms.
So that's interesting.
Mushrooms are hyper-intelligent creatures.
Right.
They're ancient. They're before plants and animals. So they're the ancestor of both. They make mycelium hive networks. They're actually integrating mushrooms into computer chips right now because they transfer data faster than any electronics.
Right.
And there's actually a mushroom church that just popped up.
Yeah, that's weird.
I saw that.
And then they make the fae rings. Do you know that? Fae rings you see are actually mushrooms underground making them. And we think it's something basically like a miniature hadron collider where they're gaining energy in this circular motion. Because nobody can explain why they really do this, why they make the circles. So we think it's their way of trying to interact with the 3D world from their 2D world, essentially. And mushrooms essentially will cut off whole chunks of their body if it inconveniences them. So all these jokes that the Fae do where you have bodily harm, it's still kind of funny to them because they're not as attached to any given part of their body as we are. You know, it's not that big a deal. So these jokes and they transfer over. It's very interesting. I think you have a Fae fort. I think there's very, very few of them left. I think it was Ireland went through in like the 1800s and systematically dug every one of them up they could find.
Wow.
And where Paris from,
I did not know that.
Our good buddy, their version is trolls. But the trolls are very magical too. We have the here in America, we have the thought that trolls are big mountain giants and, you know, swinging rocks, and they could be some of them. Because fairies or fae aren't small. But yeah, the trolls are small. And they actually live in these rock piles called troll houses. So Scandinavia as a whole, rerouted a highway recently because they found one in the route.
Really?
A troll house.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they rerouted an entire national highway because they found one. And the government was saying, no, go ahead, build it there. And all the workers were like,
Nope.
Heck no. You know what lives in that thing? We knocked that thing over. It's like a beehive. And that's essentially what I believe you have on your property. You have the gateway or the hive. So they are supposed to have a hole in the top of them somewhere. You shouldn't look into it again. I'll warn you.
Okay.
It's not good.
I don't know. If you want your show to be really interesting.
Yeah. Blair went missing.
What you're saying is that someone probably shouldn't destroy anything on the property or build construction on the property or do anything like that. Probably not a wise decision.
If you're going to do that, bring a lot of iron. A lot of iron.
Well, like swords and stuff?
Pure iron.
Oh, okay.
Not not processed iron, like gotcha. Pig iron.
Yeah.
No, it's
swinging swords in the woods.
Did you get that feeling too?
Yeah. It's like forest elemental. It's just like
elemental phase. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of, at this point anyway, before our conversation, I have kind of just thought of over the years of like, this kind of sounds like an elemental of sorts. Mm-hmm. Just something that is more of a protector of the woods type deal, because obviously it gets pissed off if there is any destruction of trees or, you know,
mm-hmm. everything from ghosts to face. So for your example is when it was swirling around the tent, essentially that black fog, when we did our fan,
it wasn't swirling. It was
like a dome
staying put at the top of the tent.
No, I'm talking when your dad took the flashlight and looked out and you couldn't see the table.
Yeah. It was completely black. There was nothing.
Yeah. So it's like encapsulated you.
Like they dropped a veil. Yeah.
So
that's what I thought too. Like it was like you were actually looking into a different realm. Like for some reason you were in that bubble.
So it was one of the smokestack rocks when we did our original Fae episode a long time ago. Fae in North America, where a lady witnessed small creatures kind of described like puck wedgies, and they started forming this tornado and actually covering up the smoke rock, and the smoke rock disappeared. And she went in town, told everybody thought she was crazy until one of the doctors went out and he seen them too. And then the whole town went out and seen the phenomena, and they were, whatever they were doing, you couldn't see inside to see the rock. They like covered the rock until they were done. And then they went away.
Weird. Mm.
So all aspects, if you start looking in with fae or fairies or forest elemental like that, pretty much every aspect of your encounters can be found in those encounters from other people in folklore. And that's the guy who I just was talking about earlier with the boombox. After me and him talked, that's what I thought was happening on his property as well, is the Fae.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
And talking to them, here's the weird thing. Never give them your name. You never introduce yourself. There's a lot with fairy magic and actually giving up your name. When you give them your name, you're giving them your name. And they can change places with you, changelings, all this stuff.
Creepy.
They're very not good to be around from everything we've had people. And they try to, they're protecting the forest, but it's kind of weird how they do it. They're very odd,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and with recent events too, the land is being passed on because of people passing, and there has been talk about that particular person wanting to build on this particular land.
Well, good luck.
Which, yeah, I was like, I don't even know why you would want to.
Oh, I think a bulldozer will win if you do it fast enough, and it's going to really be sucky for whoever's driving that bulldozer. But I mean, look, that old country, like you said, the rest of the area around you is fields.
Mm-hmm.
It had the Fae folk in it, and it just slowly gets pieced off.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of
And that's the thing too, is like my dad is like the only person that really feels comfortable out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like he feels at peace with it. I mean, he's experienced a lot, but like, even though he's at peace with it, I mean, he still has had experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have the camper out there, and that's like probably the biggest thing that's out there. It just sits there, and there's other like junk laying around for, you know, potentially doing building and stuff. But like this camper, that's where he used to stay the night before hunting. And like he told me of a time too, where it's like, yeah, I didn't hear any noises, but I woke up to the camper shaking,
mm-hmm.
and this thing knocking against the camper. But then when he would go out, there would be no prints in the snow,
mm-hmm.
and there was no snow that night. So it's just like, yeah, I'm just like picturing that if somebody's trying to build out there, this thing is like, no, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
does the Kool-Aid man through the wall.
I don't know if you guys ever seen the show on Netflix, Hildy. The show Hildy on Netflix, their last season was all about a fairy fort.
Really? I need to check that out.
It's a fun, it's like a kid's cartoon, but they tie in a lot of like everything from Scandinavian to North American to some African folklore. But it's like a world where you know trolls are real. You can see them outside your house.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So it's very interesting. And
that's cool.
I think that old property probably was one of the last, fairy forts probably on this side of the country. I think when we started plowing everything, and who knows, there's a new conspiracy theory for all of us, is that when the U.S. government systematically started destroying Native American mounds.
Oh, yeah.
Was it to get rid of Fey mounds?
Oh. Yeah.
Because they couldn't tell which were which.
Question, my thoughts about, or my question to you, Justin and Jay, about the cave. Like, mm-hmm. Her dad had this experience that he refuses to talk about in the cave. Is it possible that when he went into the cave at some point, could he have, like, slipped into somewhere else?
There's a world between worlds, and that's kind of how the fairies get around, according to some of the folklores. And that's probably a gateway to that, if they let you. I'm sure it's, like, normally just a rock hole, right? But if they want you to walk through the door, they can open the door for you.
Could you imagine?
I don't think he went the full way, neither did your brother.
Just to peek in, like,
no, because they would be gone.
When my dad offered to show my brother was like, no, thank you. So my brother doesn't even know, like, where this thing is. And my dad told him, like, the opening isn't that big either to the cave, but he said he's like, I could take you there. You could go in if you want. And my brother was like, this is about far enough for me. So my brother doesn't, you know, he's going off of what my dad had told him, which was not a lot, but I don't blame him. I would be like, yeah, cool. Now I know. No, thanks. I'm going to go.
So some of the few stories we actually have of people going to the Fey realm come from either mostly Scandinavia and Europe as a whole. There's a giant time dilation. So you go there for 40 minutes, you come back, it's been 40 years. And the only reason we know that, but you don't age. So you're in somewhere mm-hmm. where you're just spending the afternoon. A couple of the stories were like kids going missing and coming back, and their parents are now old and gray, but they're the same kid from the same picture, and like they recognize mm-hmm. their mom and dad. Others was like the guy's wife had died at old age, and he went in. They were newlyweds, and they mm-hmm. he just went in this portal area and came back, and you know, she died at old age.
There's a movie about this.
There's plenty of movies about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then to get kids back, because Fae take kids, they'll actually dig them out of the sides of fairy mounds. So the bodies of the kids, the spirit will be in the Fae realm, but the bodies will be in the sides of these fairy forts or fairy mounds. And you'll have to dig them out to get them back. But digging in is very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you only do that to get your kid back pretty much, because it's, you know, you're going to have a fight with the Fae. Yeah. So, you know, like horseshoes, you ever seen horseshoes nailed over doors and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And they say it's for good mm-hmm. luck. Mm-hmm. Originally it was for to keep the Fae away because they're iron.
Yeah. Oh, I had heard about that.
It's to stop them from coming into your house and messing with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we say it's for good luck and stuff like that. But no, it was for the fairies, the Fae folk. It was to keep them away. I don't know if they're good or evil. They're just not good to be around. Because
mm-hmm.
the byproduct of their existence is negative towards ours and vice mm-hmm. versa.
But I wonder if like Native Americans did used to interact with them and
live
with them.
I think they did a lot more. Their way of living was a lot different than ours.
Yeah. What if their mounds were their own versions of fairy mounds?
Mimicry of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Our communion spots or who knows? I mean, nobody's ever explained once.
Meeting points.
What a mm-hmm. mound was for.
Right, yeah. No, yeah, huh? They're all tombs. They're all tombs. Every single one of them.
And we've talked about this, and I'm sure you guys know, but for the listeners, pretty much all the mounds that had bodies in them, like Serpent's Mound, for example, were put there well after the mound was constructed. The mound was built first by whatever culture lived there first. Then mm-hmm. decades, centuries, or millennia later, a new culture moves in and finds this really cool thing. They start burying their chiefs or whatever in it.
So, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
A cool thing that we've done. Serpent's Mound is actually not real anymore. A lot of people don't realize that. They dug it all up and rebuilt it. So the one you go see is not even the same thing that was originally there. But we've done a few mounds that still exist. We did pollen analysis. so you can tell what year stuff was built. So like some of them, the bodies are like 500 or 1,000 years younger than the mound itself.
Damn.
So the mound was there. Weird. The culture probably died out. And then these new guys moved in and are like, really cool things. And then the only reason we know about all the mounts in Ohio. So Ohio destroyed, for example, because Ohio had probably out of the most mounds of any state in the country.
Not a lot.
Because it was the transition of several large waterways, a big meeting point for the mountain tribes and the prairie tribes. It was just this kind of really big meeting area, just where the way it's central, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was in the year of, and I may, everybody at home, I may get these dates a little off, but it's rough. Ohio, it was like from 1908 to like 1911. It was a 3-year period. And they destroyed 8,000 mounds in Ohio in 3 years.
Wow.
The That's government crazy. Did. And the only reason we know about the 8,000, they probably destroyed more, is one farmer, and you can buy his book. He went out and measured and mapped every one of them before they were destroying as fast as he could.
Yes, or as many as he could.
As many as he could. As many as he could, he went and measured them, mapped them, drew them, and then would go to the next one because they were just plowing them for fields, what the, you know. So he documented, I think, like 8,000 of them.
There's a lot.
So it was over a mound, over like 3 or 4 mounds a day they were destroying systematically in a very short period of time.
That's nuts.
What is your mound shape like? I'm just curious.
It's just a traditional mound shape. Like there's a big lump. There's no actual like animalistic shape or anything to it.
Mm-hmm. There's not like a little tree or something on it, is there?
No.
Okay. It's pretty dead on top.
Just grass.
Just, yeah. Basically. Is the grass really long or is it pretty?
Probably shorter. That's weird. Wouldn't say it's very long at all, to be honest.
And no one's out there mowing it regularly?
No.
Oh, okay.
And I would say in some parts even you can see the dirt through the grass. I mean, it's covered, but it's almost sparse, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would be kind of curious, too, if there's a big magnetic anomaly or a gravitational anomaly out there.
Or if there's a little old man living in the mound.
Well, yeah, there is. We discussed it. That was the Bigfoot.
Oh, okay.
You were here for that.
Yeah, no, I meant actually a little old man.
Oh, like an actual person?
Yes. A human being.
Oh.
Out there.
And he's just screwing with you guys the whole time?
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Don't look beyond the mound.
You'll find out throughout the whole forest and woods, there's like pulleys and levers and fishing string.
McDodge.
Everything's going on.
What? McDodge. Already know it's the Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
Real quick, before we love tangents. Yeah, have you guys ever seen the show McDodge?
No.
No.
He's a Pacific Coast guy. He was Oregon or Washington. I can't remember. Fully, he was... He fought in Vietnam, and he was a motor mechanic. He went feral and he's living out in the woods 100%. He lives in hollowed out trees, and he has different homes, and
I did not know about
And they had a camera crew follow him for like 2 seasons until the camera crew quit, because it sucked. He's this big, burly mountain man. There was one episode, which is 100% real, I looked into it. There was a lady's car had broke down in the national park he was living in. And the camera crew noticed it, and he walked out and scared the ever-living heck out of this lady because he's this big, giant, hairy dude, tattoos all over, no shoes. He looks like a Bigfoot with pants on.
I was going to say, like a Sasquatch.
And he's like, what happened? And she's like, my car just quit, and she's freaked out. Once she's seen the camera, she felt a little better. And he just goes in there and starts doing stuff, and then he's like, start it up, and it started up. And the camera guy's like, how'd you do that? He's like, well, I was a motor and airplane mechanic in Vietnam, and I was that for 20 years after.
Yeah, that's insane.
Wow. That's, wow.
So, Hallie, did I give you a new name this time again?
Yeah.
What do you think about all that? I'm curious.
I mean, it tracks to me. I mean, my only thought initially was like it was something that had the ability to, I don't know if shapeshift is the right word, but, you know, I was like, what is it that is able to do all of these things? Because there are shadow people, too. That's another thing that you've seen out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I wasn't familiar with the Fae
So
that
it sounds
never crossed my mind.
It makes sense to me because the elementals, you know, mm-hmm. being connected to the land. My story is very different, like very different, and it's very short. So I'm curious to see what you guys think about. Well, it'll be short. I'm curious to see what you think about my experience. And I, too, live in a very rural area. This happened when I was, like, around 15. It was the first time my boyfriend actually came out to the property to visit. To kind of give you the layout of the backyard, basically the backyard butted up next to a field. And at the end of the field, there was a tree line. And then a tree line on the opposite sides. So a friend came over, the boyfriend came over, was a fall evening, not super late, still plenty of sunlight outside. And we're kind of just sitting on this porch swing at the near the edge of the backyard. And I don't know how you guys are, but like, you know how sometimes you just get feelings, you're like, oh, yeah. What the hell is that? Like something doesn't feel right. And it mm-hmm. draws your attention to a direction. So we all feel this simultaneously. Look down to my left, probably maybe like 30 to 50 feet away at most. This giant black dog appeared out of nowhere. But it wasn't like a normal black dog. It wasn't a coyote. I don't think wolves are in that area. But what was so weird about it is the back of this thing was probably at least 4 feet high. It had a giant head, really long black fur, probably, I don't know, like maybe like 5 to 6 inches long, kind of all over.
Mm-hmm.
And what was so weird about it is like, it was staring at us, like it turned and like looked at us. And I got this feeling in my gut, like it was like looking at us, like, what are you doing here? You know, kind of like a little, like a little bit of a curiosity. Of course, I was terrified. We were all terrified. The boyfriend was so scared that he like jumped up on the back of the porch swing and was standing on my hand, like trapped me there. And then, of course, you know, not a good sign for a first date. But I mean, I'm a freezer. I don't run. I'm just like, what the heck am I supposed to do? I'm looking at my friend. I'm looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of like have that moment and then look back down at this thing. And it just, the only way I can describe it is that the way that it moved, it literally looked like those things on scary movies where things like glitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the body like shifts like real jerky and then it just disappeared. It didn't run off. It literally just did this like and then it was just gone. And to this day, I still have no idea what it was. Don't know where it came from because we would have been able to, I would think we would have been able to like hear it or see it come up. But the fact that it glitched out and didn't run off and that I wasn't alone means I'm not completely crazy. Other people still remember it, you know, 20 some years later in that same level of detail. And the only thing I know about the land is that my parents, we had horses on the property and they would always be out kind of like tending the field. And they found numerous Native American arrowheads and they found like this fully hand carved stone axe head. And whoa. I know it's was heavily Shawnee area. So in my mind, I'm like, maybe it was some connection to the land, but I really don't know. I don't really have any inkling of what it was, but it shouldn't have been there. It looked at us like we shouldn't have been there. So I don't know. It was terrifying. It was weird. And it happened.
Hmm. My first thought was the black shuck.
Yeah that's what I thought too. Shuck.
Until the glitching and disappearing part.
I mean, they disappear, but not like... So do you guys know the full like lore with like the black shuck and the great white dog?
The black shuck is usually connected more closely to like cemeteries, right? And churches.
It depends on which culture.
Yeah.
Even in Europe itself is very different. So in it's either Ireland or Scotland. The black shuck is a guardian. The big black dog's a guardian. They look scary, but they're actually there to help. We read a story a long time ago on the show about a traveler that was about to get mugged. This is like 1700s. And this giant wolf dog, black as night, came out and protected him from the people that were mugging him, and then walked him the whole way to the next city. And then the white dog is evil. And whether it's a, like a fable to kind of teach you, don't ever read a book by its cover, or, you know, judge a book by its cover, because the black dog is, most cultures don't have it very hardly associated with the evil. You know, a lot of the European, it's good, or it's around with death and stuff like that, but it could be the same thing with the angel of death or the grim reaper. It's not there to take your loved one. It's just there to walk them to the next place. You know, it's nice to have somebody walk you. But the glitching out thing made me very similar to, like, a lot of the Point Pleasant stuff with, like, Mothman, you know, that we always call him the international trash panda. Like, it's a canid that is out of time. It could have been a dire wolf. And it was itself experiencing a time shift.
Yeah.
And you just happen to land on your property for a minute. And it's like, uh-huh. Oh, what's that over there? This is not good.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my impression of the experience is, just because of the feeling that I got when it was looking at us, like, you know, it wasn't like snarling or menacing or anything like that. It was more like, that's weird. You know, like, what are you doing here? And I'm like,
what are you doing here?
It wasn't a hyena, though, right?
What's that?
Wasn't a hyena, though, right?
No.
Just had to ask. Now, you've seen a brown hyena, right? Not just a spotted. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. With the big shaggy mane and the big long fur. Okay.
Yeah. Just checking. The glitching in itself to me kind of read as interdimensional.
Yeah, definitely. And you said the head was that, did you feel the head was oversized?
It did seem oversized. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going interdimensional.
It's probably some Project Bluebeam stuff. I don't know.
Oh, and a side note, that area has some pretty interesting stuff going on. I mean, we also had like spirit activity on the property, and then my mom ended up leaving that property and moving across the street and built a house there. And she has sent me a lot of ring cam footage of their back of the yard and the woods. And there's some pretty interesting stuff that's really tough to explain that's going on out there. Oh, so really? I don't know. There'll be moments where, like, I'm sitting on the back porch and, like, you know how, like, a good wind will pick up and it'll move the branches and trees. There'll be sections of the trees where nothing is happening when it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard all kinds of, like, strange noises out there, like the growling. I think I sent you an audio clip of that blare of that one thing that you one time. Did. And I'm just like, what the hell is that?
That was creepy.
There have been Bigfoot sightings out there as well in that same area.
Is this southern Indiana?
Yeah.
Have you ever, you should listen to our episode when David came on.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Because he's down there too. And
really?
He's a researcher in the area.
Yeah.
It is the weirdest, probably, it's almost as weird as Ohio.
Text me the episode name and I'm definitely always. I want to hear that.
It's probably called David the Paranormal Indiana Extravaganza or something like that.
Gosh,
we name our stuff the stupidest things.
That's late season 1 or early season 2, I think.
See, it was definitely season 2 or 3. It wasn't in season 1 at all.
It wasn't season 1. Oh, that's right. Yeah, the whole time thing has got me thrown off.
No, I think it was probably season 3 actually. It
might be, yeah.
With how, because that would have been early. That would have been late last year. Yeah, right around Crypticon.
Definitely very interesting stories.
Yeah.
And experiences he had.
No, and I think I'm with you with the interdimensional or time slips. We've done a little bit with like time slips of these creatures. Like dire wolves, like they weren't as big as you see them on the Game of Thrones. You couldn't have rode them or something like that. They were still very large, you know, 2 or 3 times the size of a modern day timber wolf, but, you know, but not like grizzly bear sized. But they had really big heads because they would crack bones of some of these megafauna. So if that's, you know, maybe what you've seen out of time, or or somewhere, you know, interdimensional. We don't know. But the glitch really makes you think of that words. And the way the creature reacted, too, makes you think, like, this sucks just as much for you as it did for me.
Yeah. It's just weird, the timing of that, you know, like the fact that, I don't know, that we all experienced that at the same time. Yeah. And I don't know, just right place, right time, or wrong place, wrong time, depending on how you want to look at it.
Well, I think our electromagnetics of our own body can kind of cause those phenomena to react.
Well, and we were teenagers, too, you know, so the whole, like, how there's more, like, teenagers tend to have more, angst. Like, poltergeist activity and stuff like that. So
that's energy. That's a part, you know, mojo. We produce a lot of energy. Yeah. And that can make that stuff react, in my opinion. Like portals and even that kind of stuff may react from our electromagnetic signatures.
Yeah. I feel very strongly that in that section of land, there is a portal. Just because of the stuff that I've seen on the Ring cam, which I can probably find the video and send that over to you. But it just doesn't make sense. And then there's the one thing, Blair, that I sent you about the thing that was like walking across the backyard and then
that's
vanished.
What I was thinking of.
Is that the Gumby thing?
Huh?
Is that the Gumby thing?
I don't know. It was just like a white mass that was probably about 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
It just moved across the backyard and then it just vanished into the corner.
Like a big gelatinous cube or what?
No, it was more like a mist, but it was almost human shaped.
Human shaped.
Wow. And then,
yeah.
Wasn't that burned down video Southern also Indiana. Had growling in it?
Yeah, there was a growl. You could hear a noise at the end.
Before it like went
into the ground.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ooh, maybe the growl scared it off.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think you should just burn down Southern Indiana.
For sure.
Just burn it all down.
Well, I think they're due for a wildfire.
Well, the other interesting thing is that property sits right next to Lothry Creek.
Okay.
You know, so geologically speaking, I'm sure there's some stuff going on that maybe makes it more of an amplifier for, you know, some of that.
The water has a lot of energy.
Stuff.
Yeah, but that's what we tend to found a lot of the stories focus around. There's always a creek or river or something nearby or on the property.
Yep.
Common occurrence.
So, yeah, mine's not as crazy and wild as Blair's story, but we bonded over weird stuff. That's how we met and kind of started the show.
Bonded over the weird things.
Fey folk to teleporting dogs.
Yep.
That's a good thing to bond over.
Yeah. Well, and on the show, we talk about things that are very different. You know, the show that we do is more about where you guys are more like science, biology, and theories and things like that. We talk more about some of the stuff they don't teach you when you're a kid about history and how dark it is and how weird it is.
And how sometimes it can be a little funny. And karma does exist, and sometimes it is in the best ways.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll just tell you this. What I learned from U.S. history is don't take free blankets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A whole people annihilated because of blankets. Mm-hmm. We just did an episode on syphilis.
We did.
So the next episode after this one airs on our show is the season finale. And we get really hard into the Western Native American tribes and just how horrible it was to live out there when the white settlers came.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think our listeners would be really into that too. So you have to let us know.
It's exciting.
We'll put that in the show notes and guide them back to your show. And
exciting. Well, we're at an hour and a half. I think this is a good place to end it. It was amazing, guys.
Yeah,
it was good.
This was so awesome. Now, it was fun to hang with you.
Tell everybody where to find your stuff, and I'll put all the links in the show notes on our side of it.
Okay. Who wants to go? Do you want to go? Do you want me to go?
You can go first.
So, I mean, as far as finding the podcast, we're called Macabre. You can't miss us. Our logo is like a skeleton sitting on a Shea lounge with a girl. So pretty, pretty easy to find that. But we're on Spotify, Apple, pretty much all the major platforms, iHeartRadio. Mm-hmm. You can find us. Our website is macabrepod.com. And we do have a private Facebook group currently. Just search Macabre and you'll find us. It's pretty fun. We have a nice little group of dedicated listeners that like to share funny, dark history memes. And
yeah, they're freaking awesome.
Yeah. But it's not just history. We touch on true crime and paranormal and a little bit of anything that fits under the umbrella of macabre. We talk about it. There
you go. Which is a lot.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was you talking. And it really just scared the hell out of me.
I can throw my voice, I guess.
I don't know why. My hair was covering up the screen. And I was looking at you and you were talking.
My mouth.
It was scary.
I've been working on my telepathy.
Blair and I tend to like almost ruin our microphones pretty much every episode because one of us will
start.
Yeah.
Right.
We're also funny, even though it's macabre. We try to throw in some humor.
There's humor in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a tradition of how we like to end this. So hopefully you guys would like to participate. But we'll count down from three and we'll scream goodbye or bye into the microphones. So that's how we end every episode.
We kind of do that too.
All right.
We do.
So 3, 2, one,
bye.
All right. We did it.
We did it. Oh, woof. What do you think, listeners?
Now you know.
Yeah. And now you know. Is that from G.I. Joe? Where it's like,
I don't know.
Like, and knowing is half the battle or something like that.
I didn't actually watch G.I. Joe. Growing up, I don't think so. I was more of a Castle Grayskull fan. Speaking of, I just saw one.
Heck yes.
I just saw one at a thrift store the other day.
What?
I kind of wanted it, but I didn't get it.
Did it come with Skeletor?
No.
Oh. Skeletor is my jam.
They just wanted too much money. They just wanted too much money for it.
Damn it. I freaking love He-Man. Fun fact, I went a Skeletor a couple years ago for Halloween.
Oh, of course you did.
I fucking love it. Oh. But yes, not to digress, because you guys listen to a lot of crap, but, you know, this is how Hallie and I met, and I can't even say how amazing this journey has been so far, and it has taken us to places we never fucking thought we'd be. So here we are.
And shout out to Justin and Jay at Cryptids of the Quarn. Thank you for being our gracious hosts. Always a good time. Thank you to Nick
and Jake from America's Scary Land too. You guys all freaking rock. Listeners, please, if you haven't heard of them, America's Scary Land or Cryptids of the Quarn, please check them out. They are funny and they're amazing to hang out with. We definitely want to do that again.
And so we're just about to wrap up season one, and we can't wait to dive into season two. We have a lot of really awesome content planned for the new season, and we hope you'll stick around. We want to hear from you. Definitely drop us a line at thatsomacabre@gmail.com. Feel free to join us over at the private Facebook group where all the cool kids hang out. If you want to get freaky with us over on the Patreon page, see our lovely faces now that we're showing our video recordings over there. And if you want to send in your audio recordings, you can send that to our SpeakPipe on macabrepod.com.
Heck yeah.
MacabrePod or the macabre? Now I'm questioning myself.
Macabrepod.com.
Yeah. SpeakPipe.
Oh,
macabrepod.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this crossover episode. For now, stay safe, keep it macabre, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.